There were four besotted souls in the movie theater, maybe five. I've never been very good at counting, so you'll have to take my estimate. They were all named Jacques for some reason. Don't ask me why. After all, I didn't ask questions. I'm not a man who is fond of judging others, but I wanted to snap them gingerly out of their mad Dickensian obsession. The flick playing on the screen was Mikhail Haneke's The White Ribbon, and had they understood the images they were watching, had they comprehended the magic black and white, they may not have asked me so delicately, so politely, for change for the laundromat.
Lay down in the tall grass.
Okay, so I'm here with Christian Berger, who is the cinematographer behind The White Ribbon. Christian, how are you doing?
Thank you, very fine.
Okay.
I'm in New York, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How many times have you been to New York, Alec?
No, I'm only the second time here, in fact. It's a shame, but it's a pleasure to come here if you can pick up an award.
Yeah. That's really the reason for coming here. Well, I wanted to first
to make interviews with you. And,
absolutely. Well, thank you. Wow, I'll try to make it worth your while. Well, I wanted to first of all ask about, just starting from the basics, the black and white look, how you establish this in a color world. I noticed, for example, there was a considerable attention to having a gray schematic for the walls, where there's often a kind of two-panel wall where part of it was dark and part of it was gray. The question in my mind is what colors you use to get that particular look, and how this worked in with the, I know you use color negative for this, and I'm curious as to how much you planned in advance, or whether you relied a lot on post-production to get everything matching right. But maybe you can talk specifically about the gray tones. I'm particularly interested.
First of all, that was from Michael Haneke, and as long I know from the project too, it was always clear it has to be in black and white. Then came a pressure from production side, or from one TV station who was participating in the financing system. They were asking for to have at least the chance to have a color version, because they were scared from black and white, the old story. And now I hope nobody speaks anymore about it after the success. But that was the reason why we started to think of color negative. Then after the test, I was very happy about that, because with the old black and white negative, we could never achieve that result, which is logic in a way. It was only a nostalgic reaction, say, black and white, like in the old days. It would have been wrong.
Yeah.
Color negative is really on the top of the technical possibilities now, the last generations. And for example, the rich color space, or color room, you say, I think, you have in the negatives, you can transfer it to a very fine grayscale. That's already a big difference.
Yeah.
And it's already an answer for what you asked me. Yeah, this you cannot really do in the post-production, because the grayscale is quite fixed by the, given by the colors. So that we were testing before with the production designer, with costume, very important, because we had a few very nice textile, very good costume designer, a woman, but they gave the same gray, for example, different blues, as different red can do it too. Production design, the same problem concerning the studio and the whole equipment from the rooms, color from the walls, furniture, everything. But that you could test out relatively easy. The second part, direction of the tests, was how to handle the light level from oil lamps, from torches, from candles, natural fire sources, we were depending on. So the whole lighting, which was necessary, of course, had to go in relation to that level, which is very low. And there, the digital post-production possibilities came in the game, because we have a few very important scenes, very dark scenes. They were definitively not, it was definitely not possible to copy them analog.
Yeah.
It was not enough. But with the digital way, you scan the original, and each little silver grain, which was touched by a light, you can work it out without gain and so. And that gives the two a kind of new look, I think. The combination of that both qualities.
But if you're touching up every silver halide, the question remains is whether there's a disadvantage towards something looking perhaps too crisp or too clean. I'm curious whether you...
Do you have that feeling?
Well, not entirely, because you left a lot of dark areas, particularly like there's that great doorway shot when there's the corporal punishment scene, where we see the camera go through different doors and you see various black expanses as the doors become open.
Completely, yeah.
Just a sign of light.
Oh, so you're telling me that you were able to, I suppose, if it looked too crisp or too clean, you were able to possibly corral this because you lit a lot of areas very dark. Was that your strategy?
Or? Dark is too usually a problem on the analog way because it's grainy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the standing stable dark.
Yeah.
And I think Haneke was quite happy with that clean quality. He loves it.
Got it.
No, there was no grain whatsoever anywhere in this film. I didn't see any, but why was grain off limits?
The copies we did now from the digital intimate, they are quite good. Yeah. I don't know if you have seen. No, in the festival you have seen for sure the digital cinema version.
Yeah, I saw that one.
That's anyway clear. And in the cinema you might have seen the. There are both possibilities depending on the cinema. But even the analog copy, if it's properly screened, mm-hmm. project enough light, and so it looks quite clean too.
What was the ASA stock on this, and how did this affect the characteristic curve in terms of getting this clean look? What were you dealing with? I mean, I'm very specifically, what negative were you resorting to, and how many color negatives did you actually test during the course of the planning of this film?
No, we used from Kodak all sensibilities. We had 500 a lot. Of course, it was a need for all the night scenes. Stays completely without grain. And 250 daylight for the inside, the original locations, and 100 ASA for outside.
Okay. Did you use 200 for the scenes that were lit? For example, the school teacher scene where Eva comes to the school teacher.
The classroom, you mean?
Yeah, the classroom, I'm sorry.
Yes, that's a classic example. Classroom, a scene I love really very much is that talk about death between the little boy and the sister. This is too, I developed an own light system, so I try to hold the set completely free from equipment. Minimize it, only camera and sound and nothing else, especially with kids. But even for normal actors, it's quite rude how we handle them usually. You know, the set is full with shit from the roof to the ceiling. And I try to do that from outside and to redirect the light with very small little high-tech reflectors. So for that kid scene, for example, we had inside practical nothing, just a little fill, and which was not in the room, and very small tiny reflectors for the face from the boy, just to have a shine in the eye, or to it's like to caress the persons and not to rape them.
Yeah. That's one way of putting it. But the school teacher scene where Eva comes to the school teacher in the school, what did you do for fill on that? Because I noticed that there was some reflection going on the wall to get the details lined out. And part of me was thinking, oh, well, he's not exactly pulling a Barry Lyndon here, because I don't think it's entirely lit based off of that light. So what did you do for...
Possible.
Yeah.
No, that was one of the first critical scenes like that. And it was, in fact, too much fill. Yeah. And for Michael, it's always too much to light, darker. And he has already adapted eyes like the bird in the night, you know, who catches mouses blind. So we had too much fill, but that you can easily put down in the post-production. A problem was that we had to have an additional light, and they move. It's one shot from the organ, he goes to her, then they sit down, okay, then it's shot. And then with them back. And it was a fill light trying to move it synchron. But it produced sometimes a second shadow.
Yeah.
And that was a question that was repaired by the post-production then.
Huh. Oh, so you took out the shadows in post?
Yes. No, the wrong shadows.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
The right one has to stay.
Ah, okay. Well, when did you start?
That's physical borders, you know, limitations. Yeah. Each second, third, or light source makes produces a shadow. There's nothing to do.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm curious when you started really getting your hands dirty with digital post-production and removing the shadows. On what film did you start doing this, and how did it evolve? Was it a temperamental process, I presume, at the very beginning to get it looking just right and to get it as clean as Haneke wanted it?
Yeah, because he's a director, he believes what he sees.
Yeah.
I'm believing what I'm seeing, he says always. And that was not possible, so he was not happy. And then he did that with a colorist. He's still called colorist, even if they have to do much more than before.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did that reparations with him because I was not there. And then we did together the whole balance for the whole film. But that was already clear during the shooting that it needs a reparation because it was clear not possibly.
Yeah.
Not possible.
I'm curious what, say, if any, you had in relation to how a particular lighting schematic or a shot lined up with the fixed placement of actors. I think of the children in this film who are often placed in very specific spots. And I also think of the motif I see throughout of Haneke's movies where he generally has a character with his back to the camera. And do you have any ability to basically say to Haneke, look, you know, if you're going to do this, guess what? We're going to have a problem in terms of getting the absolute shot or the lighting that you want if you insist upon this particular blocking. And have there been any instances where you have talked or discussed something?
That was the crisis. That was the crisis moment.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to change his plans for technical reasons. He says, no, it has to be possible. Huh. And he holds very long on that position.
Yeah.
Then it's sometimes that, okay, then we have to do it afterwards.
Yeah.
But we are both against that famous line, we do it in the post.
Yeah, we'll fix it in post.
Yeah, we fix it in post. That's not, I don't believe in that because then you produce shit before.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. You can accelerate, you can going down with something, you have very, very many possibilities. They are new, like to spot out certain luminance and only treat this one and the rest stays stable, or only the shadows, only the highlights and this kind of things, which is already a big, big progress. And that we did together then for the whole movie. And two, a big problem was the snow pictures because we had no snow in that winter. They are all digital.
Yeah.
Even the burning barn.
Yeah.
Was no snow. I mean, we did a little foam or that artificial snow in front that he has a reference, and then the rest was done with some white stripes on the roofs in the background, and he can work on it.
If Haneke's approach was very fixed in many instances, were there any particular shots in this where you did manage to get through his very fixed notion and explain to him something that was problematic in any part, or did things more or less remain fixed from Haneke?
For example, when the boy comes, the farmer boy comes to the dead mother,
yeah,
lying on, you know, with two candles. There we had very little additional light, only around the mother and if he comes nearer. But the problem was that you should see the room, you have to feel the room, otherwise it's nothing.
Yeah.
And that he discovers very late his brother, which sits in the background. And that, I always tried with him, let's do a little more, you can reduce this, but if it's not there, you have nothing to treat, to work on. But it works out very well at the end, but very at the limit, so if you have a wrong screening, you don't see anything anymore. Or DVD, we have to do a new master for DVD, because, or even television, for transmission, is you have to do another version because it will not work like we did it for the cinema. And even there it works not if you have a very weak projector.
Oh, yeah.
Another example was classical, is that we have physical borders or limitations. It was the kids, when they discovered that the barn burns in their sleeping room. And as it was more or less one shot, now we have different shots, but it has to be on a level. When the mother arrives with the lamp, which was a real oil lamp, you think it's 1,000 watt. But it's only a real oil lamp.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what it means. It was not, it was nothing not to measure anymore,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that this kind of scenes you could have not copy anymore analog.
Yeah, yeah.
Simply not enough. Oh. Or it would have been smoky, gray, unattractive.
So you boosted the oil lamp in post then, essentially?
A little boosting and the rest a little going down. The problem stays because you have a white sheet on the in bed and you have a skin tone. And
yeah.
The skin is always under the white sheet.
Yeah.
And that you cannot change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wants to see nothing but the face from the boy.
Got it. If you're shooting for so many different formats, it's going to appear in theaters, either in film or digital. It's going to be on television. Which format, I mean, you're going to have to make trade-offs. One particular version is going to look better than the other. So how do you corral the look of all these various transfers to get it more or less in line with what your vision and Haneke's vision is?
It is. We have the same vision. It's not a different. It's just some technical condition he loves to ignore, because if it's good in Cannes and on the festivals, it's okay. I have to take care toward the producer that he can sell his tape. But it's not so difficult. It's just everything a little more. It's not. You have not to redo the whole thing. It concerns the whole film, and if you have ideal conditions like in Cannes or in a good cinema screening, then it's perfect. I'm very content with the result. Only do you have no tolerance anymore. And you need tolerance if you could put it for a normal television, because the people have all wrong. They are wrong adjusted, and then they say, what's that? Is a long break or what?
Yeah.
Is this radio or what?
How have you dealt with the...
But we have not the different visions.
Yeah, okay.
It's important for me.
The collaborative.
No.
That's all good. How have you dealt with the shift to HDTV? I mean, I'm seeing a lot of old movies that were transferred to TV. And I, for example, saw in a bar of all places one of the Matrix movies, and they were playing it on there. And it was really embarrassing how the compositing turned out, because it looked so clearly that they were behind a screen. Have you had to reapproach some of the earlier films and considered the transfer from analog format to HDTV format in any capacity for anything like that? Or is this a concern for you? Or?
No, not really. I know the problem, but no, it was not gripping in that case, no.
Now, in terms of the doorways that are frequently throughout this movie, is this, I mean, how much of this is your idea and how much of this is Haneke's idea? Did you have any input into suggesting more doorways, or was Haneke having a very clear vision? Like, for example, there are many shots in the film that take place through doorways. And doors and windows. Scenes play out that way.
I love it. It was clear from the shooting list already that he wants to have it like that. And then it's only a question, for example, when the quite at the beginning from the film, when the kid's smashing stones on the window and she goes through the from the corridor to the living room to the window, I just go fluently with the iris f-stop, with the radio controlled. I go with you have we started with 2.8 and we end up at 11.5 and you don't see it.
Got it.
Proud of it. Because otherwise you would feel a fake lightning.
Yeah. One last question. I wanted to ask, because Haneke is very much into the audience as spectator and allowing the spectator to have multiple meanings and multiple interpretations of the movie. And I know he also comes from a psychoanalytical background and a philosophical background.
Even if you're not an analyst, it's quite good.
Sure. But I'm curious how much...
Audience.
Yeah,
this is the problem.
Well, the curious question I have is how much your camera work plays into the notion of treating the audience as spectator or working off of psychoanalytical or philosophical principles, or whether it's largely...
We don't discuss that at all. First, he would not like it, and then it's no need. I think what I really like with him, and it, he did it already, you can read it already in the script, is that he provokes the happenings. Mm-hmm. A colleague from you was were asking me in Los Angeles, how do you can film that cruelties with the kids and so? I said, which cruelties? Yeah. No, but it's terrible things in the movie. I said, no, in your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
You never see it. So that I love to minimize. It's a question of minimalism, to reduce everything which is not needed. But it's a very dangerous border, because if you do little step too much, you don't know anymore what's happened.
Yeah.
And if you do too much, you say, come on. So it's really a balance, and he's a master for that, I think, really. And that's why it's possible that you have different solutions for the movie, because everybody has his own world in himself, and each brain completes the story on a different way.
Yeah. Well, similarly, emotionally speaking, this film, I mean, some people have misinterpreted it as complete misanthropy, but... On the contrary, we can point to the school teacher, we can point to Eva, we can point to the boy with the bird as aspects of, well, there's this kindness also throughout this film, despite the fact that the doctor is and the pastor is monstrous at times. I'm curious if that emotional tone was ever a factor in setting up a scene in terms of modifying the lighting a little bit or changing the look somewhat.
It's more with the acting.
Uh-huh.
For example, the priest, in that scene when the boy brings the bird.
Yeah.
We had versions from that he starts to cry, till at the end it was, of course, the smallest version. But you just feel that he is moved. Mm-hmm. And the rest you interpret, because you are moved. It's better than he starts to cry. He was crying very good. It was not that.
Yeah.
But to show it would have been a fault. But there he tried it out. We tried old versions. And then he chose the one which stays on the limit. But for example, which I was wondering this time, that scene with the little boy and the talk about the death was quite emotionally for him.
Yeah.
Very much even.
Yeah.
But written already. It was not how he was acting, it was in the text.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fortunately, I loved it.
Okay.
I think it's most emotionally since all his other films were less.
Yeah.
Huh? You agree?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Christian, thanks so much for taking the time out to talk. It was a pleasure.
Great.
For me too. Thank you.
Thanks.
The street glistens like the stars in the sky. The frost christens every car that drives by with ice that I know. Those old black and white movies were true.